is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, welcome to it. How you doing? You doing all right today? Good. Keeping the faith? Good. Got a lot to talk about today. Coming up here in a few minutes, Jay Kaplan's going to be here from the American Civil Liberties Union. Yeah, you heard me right. He's going to be here to talk about a breakthrough in Michigan where transgender drivers will now be able to put on their driver's license whatever gender they identify as. And I wonder if that's going to mean male or female or if you can be like a purple unicorn. Hey, listen, I don't make this stuff up. Anyhow, he's going to be here in a minute, so keep things in mind like 888-900-9966, which is the Common Sense hotline. Anyhow, so I'm making sure that we're on top of that. Let's see here. Other things you want to know. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I know you're going to be relieved to hear, survived her primary challenge in Florida yesterday. She fought off the challenge from a guy that was supported by Bernie Sanders, supported so much that Bernie Sanders never actually showed up to support the guy. Also, Marco Rubio won in a walkaway. He will be running against Congressman Patrick Murray. That'll be a high-profile November contest that Rubio will win in a walkaway there as well. Wasserman Schultz's race against law professor Tim Canova, of course, got national attention after she got booted from the DNC for all of those racist, anti-Semitic, misogynistic emails and so forth that surfaced right at the beginning of the Democratic National Convention that were left out by WikiLeaks. But Debbie Wasserman Schultz, of course, was unemployed for about 15 minutes, thrown out for corruption and so forth. That's why she was naturally hired 15 minutes later by Hillary Clinton's campaign. Also still coming today, a professor from the University of Michigan is going to be here to break the hearts of liberals. And he's from the U of M. He's going to be here to break the hearts of liberals because he's going to come in here and tell us that gasoline is better than biofuels. Get those people some tissues because they're going to burst into tears. Yeah, gasoline is better for the environment than biofuels, according to a big study just completed by the University of Michigan. You know, those raving conservatives at U of M have found that, well, gasoline is just a better way to go. So I was reading through some things yesterday. I came across this article from the Wall Street Journal that I quite liked. I'd like to share with you from the Wall Street Journal because it explains very well this knee-jerk reaction by the left to try to paint all conservatives, all Republicans, anybody that's at the center or to the right of center as one big, giant hate group. You, me, we're just hateful, rotten scoundrels, according to the left. Because, you know, my God, if you don't vote for Hillary Clinton, you are a racist and a bigot and a knuckle-dragging pig. Well, you in the back, you might be. Let's get this straight. Calling Hillary Clinton a bigot has reporters asking every Republican inside if Donald Trump, has he gone too far? Oh my God, has Donald Trump gone too far? He called Hillary a bigot. Meanwhile, Tim Kaine is on the stump telling the world that Donald Trump is peddling Ku Klux Klan values, that Donald Trump has KKK values, and that's what he's sharing with the world. So if you're a Donald Trump supporter, well, my God, you are by extension, by Socratic logic, by extension, you are therefore a supporter of the Klan, and And hell, you've probably got a white robe right there in the closet. Now, that's disgusting. And what does the media do? Nothing. You see, it's perfectly okay for Tim Kaine to say that Donald Trump's out there with Ku Klux Klan values because he knows he'll never get challenged. The question will never get asked. Ever. But Donald Trump to say Hillary Clinton's a bigot. And why does he say that? Because he suggests that Hillary Clinton comes around to the black communities once every 4 years or so to ask for their vote and then disappears again. And the inner cities continue to become more poor, more isolated, more obsolete. And yet 4 years from now, they'll be back in the inner cities saying, hey, we need your vote. But it didn't start with Donald Trump either. For years, Democrats have portrayed the GOP as a giant hate group, as I said. Each presidential election, the drill goes like this. After Republicans nominate someone, he immediately finds himself or herself having to prove he's not a hater of African-Americans, of women, gays, of Hispanics, of people with disabilities, and the list goes on and on and on. This year's Democrats added a twist. They claim Mr. Trump represents a break with all those decent and lovable Republicans like Mitt Romney and John McCain and George W. Bush. Of course, this isn't what they were saying back then, of course, when they were running for president. In 2000, the NAACP ad recreated the gruesome murder of James Byrd. Remember him? He was in Texas. I think he was the one dragged by the truck, right? And it implies that then-Governor George Bush was somehow sympathetic to the lynching of James Byrd. Over footage of a chain being dragged by a pickup truck, Mr. Byrd's daughter says, so when Governor George Bush refused to support hate crimes legislation, it was like my father was killed all over again. Really? Can you imagine the outcry if any Republican did that? When John McCain ran in 2008, Barack Obama warned that Republicans would scare people by saying, you know, he doesn't look like all those other presidents on those dollar bills. Really? Is that what we would do? And yet at the same time, Democrats embrace Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, who specifically, and by her objectives, set out to kill black Americans, simple-minded Americans, any people of color. This is who the Democrats embrace, Margaret Sanger. Hillary Clinton got the Margaret Sanger Award and was thrilled. And while we're at it, in 2012, when Mitt Romney went to the NAACP and told them face-to-face about his opposition to Obamacare, the stories were all about how he was really trolling for the racist vote. Same thing they did this year. You see, it's not really about asking for the black vote. It's going to talk to the black people so that white people won't feel so racist, so they'll vote for you. And where do they get this garbage, and why are they allowed to get away with it, my friends? It disgusts me. The only difference today is that the Republicans have a nominee that gives it as good as he gets it. He finally dishes it back and calls Hillary for what she is. And today, he's on his way to Mexico to meet with the Mexican president. My God, the Democrats must be in complete panic. On Saturday, he's going to an all-black church in Detroit to speak to African-Americans directly about the situation they're in after decades of Democrats being in charge and getting their vote year after year. It's about time there's a bit of a change out there. 14 after on the Steve Gruber Show.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
Back to it now. The internet has been a buzz with headlines declaring almost everything the media tells you about sexual orientation and gender identity is wrong. And another headline, Johns Hopkins shrinks warn against kids going transgender. Johns Hopkins saying it's not right, as reported by Ryan Anderson earlier this month. A major new report published in the journal The New Atlantis challenges the leading narratives that the media has pushed regarding sexual orientation and gender identity. And how significant was this report? Well, co-authored by two of the nation's leading scholars on mental health and sexuality, The 143-page report discusses over 200 peer-reviewed studies in the biological, psychological, and social sciences and painstakingly documents what scientific research shows and does not show about sexuality and gender. The conclusions of the study, well, the major takeaway, as the editor of the journal explains, is that some of the most frequently heard claims about sexuality and gender are not supported by scientific evidence. And, of course, how will the activists respond? Well, they will shoot the messenger. That's what happened. The World Health Organization still considers gender identity disorder or gender dysphoria as a mental health issue, not as an issue to be dealt with in any other fashion. But besides all of that, the state of Michigan now allows individuals to change the sex on their driver's license without having to get an operation or an amended birth certificate. They can do it now with a passport. With a passport on Tuesday. 15 months of back and forth came to an end as the squabbling between two parties. U.S. District Judge Nancy Edmonds dismissed a lawsuit, not because it didn't have merit, but because the issue had become moot. The state had abandoned its old policy, she wrote, and the move appeared, quote, genuine. Hanging in the balance is a new, less restrictive policy that plaintiffs agree conforms to current scientific knowledge and research regarding transgender individuals and the medical standard of care for treating persons diagnosed with gender dysphoria, so wrote the judge. Because the old policy has been abandoned, there is no longer a live controversy between the parties. But you see, the judge says, let me quote the judge again, current scientific knowledge and research regarding transgender individuals. You see, there is no consensus on this. The World Health Organization still considers transgenderism, gender dysphoria, gender identity disorder, or whatever you would like to call it, transsexualism is another term used, as a mental issue, a question of mental health. But because these new reports have come out, these new studies have come out in places like the peer-reviewed journal that the 143-page report, gay activists and their allies will try to discredit any individual or any group. Then when that individual or group challenges their position, they reply, no one listens to him or her. They've been totally discredited. They've been discredited by a public relations firm, not discredited scientifically, not discredited by their peers, not discredited in a, shall I say, credible way, but discredited by those who want to discredit them, and then they get dismissed. Sounds like a play right out of the Clinton handbook. Whenever you hear this name going forward, and I have dealt with this group back when I worked at NBC News, the Southern Poverty Law Center is an extreme alt-left organization. The only way you can be a hate group pretty much is to be, you know, a white organization. There's a new organization out there, by the way, called White Lives Matter, instantly labeled as a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Well, they're obviously white supremacists. No, the people there say, no, we just don't believe that Black Lives Matter is right and we support police officers. The SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, has often been complicit in branding a conservative Christian organization as a hate group. If you're a Christian organization, you're most likely going to be a hate group, according to the SPLC. Or classifying a conservative spokesman as a new leader of the radical right. Therefore, whatever they say can be safely dismissed. After all, they're just haters and bigots. You see, this is how it works. When the left doesn't have an argument to respond to your logical conclusions, when you talk about things that have failed and policies that don't work and the way the country should be run and the Constitution, well, you're just a bigot. You're a slovenly bigot, a knuckle dragger, and a hater. My God, you probably shouldn't even be allowed to have the children in your house because that's probably child abuse. Holy crap, I hope I didn't just give him an idea. When it comes to the authors of this important new study, they're hardly right-wing fundamentalist conservatives, however. One of the authors, Dr. Lawrence Mayer, is a scholar in residence in the Department of Psychiatry at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine and a professor of statistics and biostatistics at Arizona State University. He has taught in 8 universities, including Princeton and Stanford, and his full-time, part-time appointments have been in 23 disciplines, including statistics, biostatistics, epidemiology, public health, social methodology, psychiatry, mathematics, sociology, political science, economics, and biomedical informatics. Not exactly a right-wing hate group guy, is he? The other offer, even more acclaimed, Dr. Paul McHugh, University Distinguished Service Professor of Psychiatry and a Professor of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. He was for 25 years, hear me now, the psychiatrist-in-chief at Johns Hopkins Hospital. And they say that everything you're being told about transgenderism and gay lifestyles, for the most part, is simply not true. Simply not true. Now, does that make... It probably makes... Well, there you go. Call me a bigot. Call me a hater. Call me a knuckle-dragger, because I actually believe somebody who is the chief psychiatrist at Johns Hopkins University Hospital. I mean, these not very smart people I rely on. We're just doing our best, dragging our knuckles along, trying to get another cup of coffee. 25 after.
Michigan, born and raised with Midwestern values and Michigan common sense.
First part of the journey, I was looking at all the life. There were plants and birds and rocks. And
it's Wednesday here on the program. Glad to have you on board. The Common Sense Hotline, 888-900-9966, or you can check in at stevegruber.com. We've got some polling going on there. Some of it's about college football, because you can't argue about politics sometimes. Sometimes you got to argue about college football. It's the way the world works. I didn't design it. I just work within the boundaries given. My next guest, Herb London, president of the London Center for Policy Research and the co-author of the new book, The Encyclopedia of Militant Islam. Doctor, welcome back.
Well, pleasure to be with you.
I want to talk about Obama and Putin at the G20 summit, but first, I do want to take a quick detour to Donald Trump's announcement last night that he is on his way to Mexico today to meet with the president there before his big address on immigration and illegal immigration and the wall and all of those things that he's going to give this evening in Arizona. This is a pretty big announcement.
Well, I think it's a very interesting announcement and a very wise thing for Donald Trump to do. He is obviously going through some modifications in the immigration policy, particularly the policy towards the illegals in the United States. So I think that Trump is trying to say, look, many of you think that my policies are extreme. I've modified those policies. I want you to know that I'm going to have a conversation with the Mexican president, and hopefully he will even embrace some of these ideas. The number of Mexicans coming into the United States illegal over the last 2 years has been so significantly reduced that there may be some change in even the idea about the bridge.
Certainly. Or the wall, the bridge, however.
The
right.
Wall, the bridge.
Build walls, build bridges,
yeah,
right.
Exactly.
So here's my question. I mean, Donald Trump is already polling stronger among Hispanics, which is shocking to the left, but he is polling stronger with Hispanics at 24%, according to the most recent Pew Research poll, shows him with 24% support among Hispanics. John McCain got 23% support in 2008. Mitt Romney just 21% 4 years ago. So Donald Trump, despite all the media piling on of, well, he said they're rapists and they're murderers and all these things, he did say some come across the board. He didn't paint them all that way. It's taking things out of context, my estimation. But he still enjoys stronger support today among Hispanics. In going to Mexico, I believe, is genius, because I think it'll only build his support.
Well, I think there's no question about it. I think that Donald Trump will do far better in the Hispanic community than most of the pundits believe, in large part because there are so many here legally. There are so many that pay their taxes and live by the rules and, of course, are not committing crimes. So those people are saying, look, we fall into a category very much like the category that Donald Trump is talking about. We are Americans. We believe in this country. We fight your wars. We are very much a part of what the United States is. So I don't understand why people out there are excoriating Donald Trump. Again, I find part of this is rather peculiar. Donald Trump has been saying what American presidents have long said in the past. Teddy Roosevelt, for example, coined the expression Americanization. And he said, if you want to come to our country and embrace our way of life and speak our language and course, believe in our Constitution and obey the laws of this land. We want you in America. And Donald Trump has said very much the same sort of thing.
Of course we do. We want hardworking people. We want hardworking people that are accountable, that raise their families and look out for themselves and don't stick their fat little fingers out trying to get something free from their neighbors. We want accountable, hardworking people in America, whether they were born here or come from somewhere else. That's true, Herb. I agree with what you're saying there. But let me ask you this. With what happened with the Brexit and what's going on with Donald Trump, you look at those that are lined up to attack Trump are the elitist Republicans, the elitist Democrats, elitist world leaders. It's the globalists that are scared to death of this guy.
Well, and I think that's true. The globalists are very scared of this guy because he has reintroduced an idea that seems very sensible, and that is national sovereignty. He's talking about this nation, and he's saying America first. Let's think about our nation. What is unique about our nation, and why do we believe that it's important to defend the principles that undergird this country? I mean, that's a very, very sensible point of view. It's commonsensical, and by and large, the elites do not understand it. We now live in a world where, of course, globalization has kind of taken hold. Well, in the case of globalization, there are many advances that occur as a result of the changes that occur with internationalizing our economy. But there are many who are left behind. Those who are left behind, the Trump describes appropriately, as forgotten Americans.
They are.
People who may very well have paid their taxes and may very well live by the laws. But you know what? People don't care about them. They are ignored in the calculus. And these are the people who, again, had very good jobs, maybe earning $75,000, $80,000 a year, worked in a steel company, have two kids, 55 years old. What do you do about this guy now that he doesn't have a position? What are you saying to him? What kind of message do you deliver? And I think by and large, Americans think about the positive side of creative destruction, to use a Schumpeterian term, but they forget about the negative side. They forget about those who have been left behind.
Sure.
And Trump, of course, has done something quite magical, and that is he has once again talked about those people in the United States who are left behind and who are very much a part of the American system.
You make a good point, Doctor, because here's what he's done. Not only is he going to Mexico, which I think is politically brilliant and the right thing to do, frankly. We have a tremendous amount of trade and people going back and forth over the border, both legally and illegally with Mexico. It's the right thing to do to come up with a strategy to how do we secure this border so that we don't have people coming in from Honduras or El Salvador or from the Middle East, frankly, that want to do us harm. This is a critical and intelligent thing to do. Meanwhile, he's also going to go to Detroit this coming Saturday. He's calling the liberal bluff. He's going right into the inner city of Detroit to an all-black church, something the liberals said he would never do. He said, really? I'll do it immediately. And I'll talk to anybody anytime to help better their lives. And as you keep putting it, the forgotten Americans are not being forgotten. While Hillary Clinton is in the Hamptons in Hollywood, Donald Trump is in Detroit and Mexico. Think about it.
Well, I am thinking about it. And I think it's the great strength of his campaign. And I think that he has brought a lot of people into the Republican Party who are not normally Republicans precisely because he is raising questions that others have not raised. Going into Detroit and saying, you know something, your lives have not been very good. And I recognize the fact that there is youthful unemployment of 58%. And I'm very much aware of the fact that your schools aren't doing so well and your kids aren't getting ahead. And why not give the Republican Party a chance under circumstances like this? He's absolutely right. Why is it that people have to vote in lockstep for the Democratic Party when they get nothing for it? The Democrats control Chicago, Baltimore, almost all of the cities that are in disarray in the United States. And what does the black population get out of it? They get nothing out of it. They get crime.
Hold on. No, you're wrong about that. They get a visit every 4 years from Democrats looking for votes. That's what they get out of it. They get a visit every 4 years to their part of the city or their part of the backwater somewhere that the Democrats come through and say, hey, aren't we great? Don't you vote for those dirty Republicans. That's what they get out of it every 4 years, Herb.
Well, of course, they're getting that kind of psychological misunderstanding. But what they're also getting out of it is the perpetuation of course, the welfare system.
That's correct, too,
they get something out of it. And they get something out of it in the sense that the Democratic Party counts on that vote.
That's exactly what they do.
Out of it with patronage jobs that are often available for some members of the community.
That's also true.
I understand what they're getting out of it, and they get something out of it because many members of the community or during the teachers' union in one way or another.
Yeah.
Look, I understand what they're getting out of it. I also understand that it's having a corrosive effect on those communities.
Very much so. Herb London, let's leave it right there, my friend. Let's leave it right there. Tell the folks where they can find out more about what you're doing, the books you've written, and so much more. Go.
It's the London Center for Policy Research is a center designed to deal with international affairs and national security questions. Of course, our preeminent goal is the welfare of the United States. We have a new book called The Encyclopedia of Militant Islam.
The Steve Gruber Show, American Values with Midwestern Common Sense.
Welcome back to it on this Wednesday. It is the last day of August, heading into the last, 7 weeks then? Until the election, just under now, 69 days, something like that, until the election. My next guest hasn't been here in a bit. It seems that he must have taken a new job. Rafi Williams joining me now. Rafi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Steve?
Good. It seems that you've gotten a new position in life.
I have. I am now working over at Circa.com. I'm gone from the RNC these days.
Well, congratulations on the move, and I hope it's working very well for you. You did some good work because you were the first to piece together the investigation into Hillary Clinton's inactivity, if you will, during the 2010 Russian uranium deal, and kind of sniffed out $2.5 million that kind of seemed like it was floating over the Clinton Foundation. Looked a little suspicious. Tell me about that.
So what I did was I looked at a cable that was sent from our diplomats in the EU. Now, why this is a big deal is because there's a company called Uranium One that owns a fifth of America's uranium reserves, and that's a strategic asset. So whenever that's sold, a government board made up of people like the Secretary of State have to approve or deny the deal. Now, in this instance, this cable said that Russia was trying to develop a monopoly over the uranium supply to the Ukraine so they could exert more political power and cut off power to Ukraine, Uranium Power's nuclear plant. And this cable warns that this is a bad thing. It's going to hurt American companies because the biggest competitor in Ukraine is a company called Westinghouse here in Pennsylvania. But Clinton says she didn't see this memo. She didn't apply it or put it towards the board when the deal came up a year later. She allowed it to go through without saying or doing anything. She refused to talk to Circa about the cable and why she didn't take action.
Right.
And so this inaction is causing problems for her because she also received $35 million from people related to the uranium company, her foundation, to the Clinton Foundation, before she didn't do anything and allow the sale to go through. You know, the diplomats I talked to about this were telling me that, you know, this is a problem that Russia is trying to dominate the uranium market in Ukraine. We should not be giving over our supply of uranium to the Russians, and we should not allow the Russians to control this much uranium worldwide. Their company that controls uranium is now one of the fifth largest in the world, and it's going to cause problems more than just in Ukraine, but the whole world.
Now, as you look at what's going on with Hillary Clinton, Rafi, and obviously people understand you used to work for the RNC, so you have certain opinions about this, but her problems are piling up. I mean, the FBI now says it has 30 more Hillary Clinton emails involving the Benghazi attack. They're probably going to come out. The FBI is probably going to release the Clinton probe files as candidate pressed to answer new questions under oath to Judicial Watch. She's going to have to do that before September 29th is her deadline because she was given 30 days by the judge to do that. The pressure on this candidate, who basically remains in hiding in the Hamptons in Hollywood, collecting tens of millions of dollars, but she's not out there on the campaign trail for the most part. She's not certainly answering questions from reporters. Donald Trump, meanwhile, is going to Mexico. He's coming to Detroit here in a couple of days. This campaign, and if you look at the polls, the LA Times, Reuters, elsewhere, there's a shift going on right now, it appears to me. What do you see?
I think you're right here, and it's because she's hiding and not addressing the issues, combined with the fact that Donald Trump seems to have gotten himself together and isn't stepping on his own toes anymore. And so what you have are all these lingering questions that have been in the background throughout this year, but they've been, you know, sidetracked by Donald Trump. And now people are going, why haven't you given a press conference all year? Why are these allegations still lingering over your head? Why are these emails being deleted that you say were there? There's so...
It seems we lost Rafi there.
About.
Oh, you cut off just for a second there. So pick that thought back up. I mean, we haven't seen her in a very long time. She hasn't answered a single question of substance. She had a kind of a mock news conference here 3-4 weeks ago. But, I mean, it was no news conference. She didn't face a hostile press, if you will, that's going to ask her everything under the sun. Like, what about your emails? What about Uma Abedin? What about your relations with uranium deals in Russia? None of those questions are being asked. She does have to answer. You know, they said, well, it was a big win for them to be able to answer in writing the questions from Judicial Watch. That's no big win. There's 25 questions there that are considered to be under oath when they're answered. I mean, that's important.
Well, she's trying to skip the presidential vetting process, which is absurd on the face of it. She needs, every candidate should go through a strong vetting process, and she thinks that she can just skip it. And it seems like she thinks she can just assume the presidency, and that's what's troubling here.
Well, it's not just her. All of her, you know, cohorts and her friends in the media and everywhere else. I wonder, it just occurred to me while I was sitting here talking to you, Rafi. Where was Rafi Williams, by the way? Can she say, I plead the fifth on these questions?
You know, I'm not a legal expert, but I would assume if she's under oath, she could, right?
I would think so. I'm not going to answer any of them. I plead the fifth on the entire questionnaire. See you later. I wonder what the judge would say about that. I'm serious. I don't know the judge. I don't know the circumstances about, you know, what the judge in this case thinks. But my point being is the problems for Hillary and her trust factor just continues to go further and further down. And you're right about Trump. He finally seems to have reset his campaign and held it there for a couple weeks.
Yeah. Well, what really gets me is that this whole campaign has been about gaining trustworthy with the American people because she had such low trustworthy numbers. But again, we're stuck at the fact is she hasn't helped herself at all in this.
Right. And the thing that you undercovered here at the Clinton Foundation is just one of many examples of people that were paying the Clinton Foundation and then getting access to, you know, to the State Department in general. Now, we don't have any straight line A to B, but it's all pretty obvious that if you made a good donation of $1 million or two or five, that you would have access to Hillary Clinton and the State Department of the United States government. That seems pretty clear, does it not?
That's the kicker here, is that these donations, I mean, look, this is a big one. They say that Bill Clinton's going to step down from the Clinton Foundation. They're going to separate themselves if she assumes the presidency. But then they say in the same breath that while she was Secretary of State, there was no conflict of interest. There was no quid pro quo going on. So the question is, how can you say one thing and do the other? Why are you taking these steps to step away, to remove yourself, if there was no problem?
Exactly. If there's nothing going wrong, why step away?
So, you know, this is the problem they've had continuously. The Clintons have a long history of just skirting the law, being just on the right side of the law.
Absolutely.
And we're seeing it come to the forefront.
Rafi Williams, glad to have you back and glad to on your new job. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Steve.
Back in a moment on the Steve Gerber Show.